I woke up on Thursday morning and thought to myself, I can't possibly preach a sermon about Jephthah's deal with God on Sunday. Having sat up on Wednesday night watching the exchanges in the House of Commons following them resuming business and our Prime Minister returning to make a statement, my head was telling me that I should look out an old sermon on the command to love your neighbour. That's what we needed to hear. That's what I thought. There was also a danger that I might produce a sermon that might upset a few folk. Such was my anger at what I'd observed the night before. And Marjorie will tell you, I went as far as emailing the office first thing in the morning to say, hold off printing the order of service sheets. I was going to change the readings and the hymns. And I sat down and I searched through some old sermons, but somebody was telling me that the passage needed to be heard, and so I stuck with it. My head was telling me one thing, but my gut was saying something quite different. Because we do need to be reminded of God's love, and they need to be confident in that love. And so it was when I sat down with my Bible and I thought, I'm going to go to the first letter of John and find some words. My Bible fell open at those pages, and the passage that Maura just read to us was the one that jumped out of the page. So decision made, stick with Jephthah, add the words from 1 John. I consulted some of my colleagues as to how they had handled this passage in recent weeks, as I knew some would have already used it as they were following the same reading pattern as I was, although slightly out of kilter because of my holidays. This reading was something that I put in the diary a couple of months ago. The writing team that I'm part of is called Spill the Beans, and they work together to produce a reading wrote it, if you like. And I have to say, on more than one occasion, the readings selected for particular weeks have been quite prophetic. Anyway, ministers are not always good at sharing, but two of my friends immediately emailed me the sermons that they had preached on this particular passage. And so what follows is guided by that, is flavoured by that, as well as some of my own thoughts. So what do you think of this story? Jephthah's deal with God, the sacrifice of his daughter for gain. Does it surprise you that a story like that is in the Bible? Is it one you already knew about, or rather wished it wasn't there? I have to say, I wished it wasn't there. What on earth is going on here are the kind of questions that are in my head. So let's take a wee look. Jephthah was an outcast. His half-brothers had driven him away because, well, he was their half-brother. And we still have a saying that the sins of the father will be visited upon their sons. And that's what happened to Jephthah. He is the son of a prostitute, and so he's driven away. And what's interesting here, though, it was his father, Gilead, who had slept with the prostitute. But that doesn't seem to be an issue, although that helps us to understand a little bit about how much power men had and how little regard was paid to women in these days. It also helps us to understand how important inheritance was. Gilead's sons didn't want to split their inheritance with Jephthah, and so they gang up with him and send him away. And it seems like their father Gilead does nothing to stop them. Jephthah does what he's good at. We read that he's a mighty warrior, so he puts his skills to use on the wrong side of the law and is soon joined by others, a band of outlaws. But then things change. The Ammonites make war against Israel and the people need a warrior to lead them. And Jephthah's skill is now very much in demand by the very people who had been happy to see him banished. They need a charismatic warrior to lead them into battle, and to be honest, they don't really care much about who that might be as long as they win. and they promise him that if he wins, he can lead, be the head of their tribe. You can see the movie trailer. Small-time boy, outcast who becomes a bandit who's welcomed home a hero. It's a classic rags-to-riches tale. One of those archetypal stories that we've talked about before. It's the plot line of half the movies ever made. So back he comes, and Jephthah makes his own promise to God, and it's pretty extreme. If you give me victory over the Ammonites, I will burn as an offering the first person that comes out of my house to meet me. When I come back from victory, I will offer that person as a sacrifice. What the? The events of the last couple of weeks have been both fascinating and more than a little frightening. And it begs the same question as Jephthah introduces to us. What would you risk or give up to get what you think you want? When Jephthah returns home, it's his only daughter who's the first one to come out to meet him. And the story is suddenly not of an outcast who becomes king. It's not a heroic homecoming or an outcome of adversity to triumph in the end. This is a story of Jephthah, and it is a tragedy. It's the story of a man who's looked down on by his own people, who's driven to the margins of his society, and then given the chance to take back control, to be in charge, to get his own back on all these people who have looked down on him because of something that wasn't even his fault. And when he gets what looks like the chance to win, to put it right, actually not to put it right, but to get his own back, he jumps at the chance. And he makes this rash, ill-conceived, unthought-through promise. I wonder what you would give up to get what you want. It seems as though Jephthah is willing to give up a lot. Or is he? Because I'm pretty sure he thinks that he will be throwing one of his servants out under the bus. Because it would usually be someone like that who would come out to greet their master on his return. But in his quest for power and influence and self-advancement, he sentences his only child, his beloved daughter, to death. And when he saw her, he tore his clothes and said, "Alas, my daughter, you have brought me very low. You have become the cause of great trouble to me." Like it's her fault. What the? The tragedy is that Jephthah thought he was doing a good thing. He thought he was making things right, getting back to the good old days when he had position and was part of a community, part of a tribe, back to a time where everything made sense and people needed him, back to a time when he mattered. This is all about him. And it leaves us wondering, what? Jephthah, what on earth were you thinking? And then we have his daughter accepting her fate. On death row, she makes a final request for a couple of months to be with her friends to grieve. My difficulty with this passage and the reason for my unrest on Wednesday night and Thursday morning is that there are so many parallels with the world today that we can think of in relation to Jephthah's deal. So many deals that people are willing to make for gain, both personal and political. So many daughters of Jephthah, innocent children whose future is stolen by our greed and ambition and our insecurities. Greta Thunberg said as much this week in addressing the United Nations. She said, "You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words." Greta is fighting for the future of the planet and the future of young people, fighting for the daughters of Jephthah who are willing to sell out on the planet's future, of the daughters of Jephthahs who are willing to sell out on the planet's future for their own gain. The situation in Yemen, mostly hidden by our screens, on our screens by bigger news, and we have governments supplying aid to help with one of the worst famines in the world has ever seen, and it's all very laudable. I mean, our government has given $770 million in aid. That's so generous. Well, it sounds so until you find out that the about the 6.2 billion in arms sales to members of the forces fighting in that area. And we forget all too quickly that the fighting between neighbours, between tribes like the Ammonites and the Israelites, is not a thing of the past. The genocides of Rwanda, the Balkans and Myanmar are not so very far from home. They begin when we talk about others as somehow worth less than us. And then there's Brexit. What an unholy mess that is. Our government had to be forced to publish its worst-case scenario paper that admits that a no-deal Brexit could result in rises in food prices, shortages of medicine, and of course these will disproportionately affect the poor. There will be a rise in black market activity possibly and the possibility of civil unrest. That's what's in the report. Now I understand that there are good people on both sides of the Brexit debate. There will be people sitting here this morning with differing views, but surely we can agree that it's a mess and that we need to find a way through it. The damage being done is both personal and collective. Families are being torn apart by it. Even our own Prime Minister's family are in disagreement. The spectacle of the Prime Minister's sister doing the rounds of radio and television studios this week was awful, I felt. Washing their Brexit linen in public, highlighting the same difficulties many families are facing. Some might say that those in favour of Brexit are the Jephthahs and the rest of us are the daughters, and others might argue that on the opposing side, those on the opposing side are the Jephthahs and the Brexiteers are the daughters. It is a mess. And this is where we need to stop. Stop the shouting, stop the hate, stop with the polarising language. And I'm preaching to myself as much as I'm preaching to anyone right now. If Jephthah's story is about anything in the context of the world today, it's about the one-sided deals that seem to be accepted as the norm. We live in a world now where we seem to have accepted that for one group to gain, the other must lose. That we grieve our losses rather than find ways of working together for the benefit of all is a sadness. In a little while, we will come together and sit around the table of grace and share a simple meal. Each of us as welcome as the other. This act should be a reminder to us of all that love that God has for everyone. How God must be grieving at what God sees God's beloveds doing to each other right now. The story of Jephthah is a shocking one. We wonder why it's there in our scriptures, and yet the story of Jesus is shocking too. God's Son sacrificed for us. In love for us, God's Son dies. But Jesus' death is a perfect foil for Jephthah's daughter. Jesus' death is not about personal gain for God. Jesus' death was for all of God's children. His death came not to end there, but to offer in his glorious resurrection hope for us all. Hope that this is not the end, but a new beginning. And so in the midst of all our disagreements over climate change, the rights and wrongs of selling arms to foreign countries, the them and us, Brexit, it's the responsibility of Christians to mirror the love that God has for God's beloveds. Eugene Peterson takes on the words of the writer of the first letter of John and puts them this way so beautifully. My dear children, let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. This is the only way we'll know we're truly living, living in God's reality. It's also the way to shut down debilitating self-criticism, even when there is something to it. For God is greater than our worried hearts and knows more about us than we do ourselves. Our friends, once that's taken care of and we're no longer accusing or condemning ourselves, we are bold and free before God. We're able to stretch out hands and receive what we asked for because we are doing what he said, doing what pleases him. Again, this is God's command, to believe in his personally named Son, Jesus Christ. He told us to love each other in line with the original command. As we keep his commands, we live deeply and surely in him, and he lives in us. And this is how we experience his deep and abiding presence in us by the Spirit he gave us. Another colleague shared this quote with me this week, and I found little to disagree with it, within it, and I leave this to with you as I finish. Richard Rohr wrote these words, "Christianity is a lifestyle, a way of being in the world that is simple, non-violent, shared, and loving. However we made it into an established religion and all that goes with it, and avoided the lifestyle change itself. One could be warlike, greedy, racist, selfish, and vain in most of Christian history, and still believe that Jesus Christ is one's personal Lord and Saviour. The earth has no time for such silliness anymore. The suffering of the earth is too great." Amen.